Hello and welcome to the Monday, August 4th edition of Juno Afternoon on KTOO News Juno. Jeff Brown and I are in the studio. This is a live show. We're going to be talking about a fundraiser at the Nickelodeon next week. We'll talk about Girls on the Run, finding out about their fall program, and of course get the update on the Salmon Derby. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Confederated Salish and Kootenai Tribes College in Montana is working with NASA on a project. Reporter Katrin Fry has more on the collaboration.
The Salish Kootenai College is one of four tribal colleges or universities nationwide to receive a grant from NASA to develop climate change curriculum. Information and education specialist for the tribe's Division of Fish, Wildlife, Recreation, and Conservation, Jermaine White, says they've received a grant for just over $1 million over 3 years. White says they'll be developing climate change curriculum with a tribal local twist for colleges and high schools.
Salish Kootenai College students will work with reservation high school students to help build this project to make it operational. And then it will be a project that will connect, that will build networks across the country and possibly across the world.
White says the tribes bring an important perspective into the study of climate change.
Tribal people are affected disproportionately by climate change. This is a very place-based education project. It will be framed by the culture and tradition, the history and language of our tribes and other tribes that we connect with and collaborate with.
White says the project offers the opportunity to send up to 2 interns to NASA's Jet Propulsion Lab in Pasadena to work with climate scientists and brings NASA climate data into the classroom.
This is really an elegant project where we're bringing those 2 elements together and crossing a cultural divide and looking at the very best science available for climate change.
Other awards went to tribal schools in Wisconsin, North Dakota, and Minnesota.
That was Katrin Fry reporting. Parts of South Dakota have fallen behind in summer precipitation. As Gary Ellenbolt with South Dakota Public Broadcasting reports, some tribal land is in a period of dry weather.
The weekly monitor from the Drought Mitigation Task Force in Lincoln, Nebraska shows an expanding area of dry weather in South Dakota. The state and much of the northern plains have gone through a cooler, drier period since the severe storms of June. South Dakota State Climatologist Dennis Toddy says some areas have been climbing up the drought scale.
The worst area we have is there's a D1 moderate drought that goes from about Forestburg, Sanborn County down into northern Charles Mix County because they have been running dry throughout most of the growing season. Even since the spring, those areas have missed some precipitation.
The Yankton Sioux tribe is headquartered in Charles Mix County. Most tribal land is in the southern part of the county, which sits in the abnormally dry category. Toddy says there could be some relief in South Dakota this week, as each day brings a chance of rain to the state. I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
Relay runners ended their run for sobriety and health over the weekend on the Fond du Lac Reservation. They celebrated with participants from various Native nations. Pat Pacella from WGZS has more.
The 36th Annual Celebration of Sobriety Powwow concluded Sunday night at Moshkaus and Powwow Grounds in the Fond du Lac Nation here in northern Minnesota. Hundreds of relay runners started from the Red Lake Nation close to 200 miles away. Not only were participants from Red Lake and Fond du Lac involved, but also supporters from other nations.
Yes, and go out to see Jocelyn Lee Yinishia. I'm from Farmington, New Mexico. I'm Navajo and Pueblo.
My name is Little Otter Woman, and I am originally from Kodiak Island in Alaska, and I live in Red Lake now.
Kia ora tātou katoa. I am Rangi, and I'm from Aotearoa, New Zealand.
A group from Fond du Lac ran the perimeter of their reservation and met up with the Red Lake runners in the Moshkaus and Powwow Arena to bring this event full circle to the enthusiastic crowd supporters of the Saturday night event. For National Native News, this is Pat Pacello.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. Native American Rights Fund has been helping Indian tribes for over 40 years with critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior with your support for NARF's work. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Hello and welcome back to Juno Afternoon. It's Monday. I'm your Monday host, Joan Pardis. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show, and you are listening at KTOO News Juno. We're a live show, and right now the weather is mostly cloudy, scattered showers after a phenomenal weekend. Tonight, mostly cloudy. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, isolated showers. And tomorrow night, cloudy, scattered showers. And anyone who is interested in watching the State Museum building get demolished, it's happening right now. So I know some people really like to see those type of things. And if you do, I took some pictures on the way into the studio, and it's big claws knocking a big building down in Juneau. All right, so that's what's going on outside. Inside, our first guest is Hannah Everett. She's a college student. She goes to Florida State University. She's lived in Juneau for 11 years, and she had a life-changing experience this spring. And she's here to talk about a fundraiser to benefit the people that she met this spring, and the benefit is at the Nickelodeon. So first, let's welcome Hannah. Hi, Hannah.
Hi.
How are you today?
I am well. How are you?
Good. Good. Great. Thank you. So let's start at the beginning. You went and did some volunteer work in May.
Yes, ma'am.
And where did you go?
I went to Chaclacayo, Peru, which is about an hour outside of Lima, and I went to an orphanage that houses 39 kids between the ages of 0 and 18. The orphanage is called the Hogar de San Francisco Aziz, Home for Destitute and Disabled Children. I was there for the whole month, and basically I just took care of the kids. I changed diapers, I fed children, I washed hair, I did the works.
And were you alone? Were you the only volunteer at this organization from the States?
I was an independent volunteer, so I went alone. But then when I got there, I was greeted by six other volunteers. Some of them were from Canada, some from the United States.
Okay, and how did you hear about this volunteer opportunity?
I had a friend who did it last summer with her boyfriend. I'm not sure how she found out about it. She's a friend of mine at Florida State, and she told me about it, and I just felt called to go. I felt like it was something I needed to do. I had done two study abroad tours before that, one to Spain and one to a variety of countries in Europe with the People-to-People Student Ambassador Program, and I felt like my next step was to do volunteer work. So I found out about this, and I signed myself up.
Okay. And how was the experience?
It was incredible. It was probably one of the most life-changing experiences I've ever had, next to my Spain trip with FSU. I learned so much about myself and about just life in general and the human experience as it is, which is why I want to do this fundraiser.
Okay, so let's talk about this fundraiser. So it's August 8th and 9th, it's at the Nickelodeon, the Goldtown Nickelodeon, and you're reviewing a film called The Human Experience. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yes. The film is a documentary put on by a band of brothers who travel the world to answer questions like, who am I? Who is man? What is our purpose here? They travel to New York City, where they live with homeless people for 2 weeks. Then they go to Peru, where they stay with the very same orphans that I stayed in. So there will be a 20-minute segment of the film specifically about the orphanage I was in. And then it concludes with them traveling to Ghana, where they stay with an abandoned leper colony. And the boys, of course, have emotional baggage of their own that they work through throughout the film. And it's really an inspirational film for anybody who's looking to have a human experience.
Okay. And then you're going to have some Peruvian refreshments, and you're going to talk a little bit about your experience as well?
Yes, ma'am. The Rainbow Girls are actually helping me put together some Peruvian refreshments. There will be chicha molada, which is a Peruvian drink. alfajores, which is a Peruvian cookie. It's kind of like a Mexican wedding cookie, but it's got caramel in the middle. And fruta de espuma, which is kind of like mousse, but it's strawberries and cream. And those will be included with your ticket. And after the film showing, I'll be giving about a 20-minute presentation about my own experiences, give some economic and political information about Peru itself, the sort of struggles and poverty rates and that sort of thing. So.
Okay. And Hannah is a junior at Florida State, where she's working on a dual major, international affairs and economics. So how much are the tickets, and how do people get tickets?
They are $5 each, and you can get them at the door.
Okay. And what if somebody's listening right now and saying, well, you know, I'm out of town August 8th or 9th, but I really would like to donate some funds to the orphanage where this young woman, Hannah, worked this spring. How would they do that?
That's very simple. You could just go to the Goldtown Theater. We have a jar there right now that's available for people who want to donate early or donate after the film. You can also mail any donations by check, cash, or you can go online to the Via La Paz Foundation website, www.vialapaz.org.
Okay, I'm going to spell that out, okay? So
okay.
That's VILLALAPAZ Foundation.org.
Yes, ma'am.
And I guess what if they, searched orphanages Lima, Peru? Would they find? Probably not.
I'm not sure.
I think you should drop by the Nickelodeon
if you're really interested
in helping. So what was the impetus? You came back. You had this eye-opening experience, and I'm going to ask you some questions about the experience itself. But for right now, the question is, what made you say, well, I really have to raise funds? You know, what did you learn about yourself as far as, you know, are you an on-the-ground volunteer? Are you, you know, a big-picture volunteer as far as fundraising? Where do you see yourself?
I see myself as a big-picture volunteer. When I was there, I really learned that I love serving people, but there's a specific way that I need to serve people. And I believe very strongly in service through leadership, which is one of the reasons why I want to host this fundraiser. I struggled a lot while I was in Peru taking care of the kids, and I really have a lot of respect for people who can give their lives to living in that sort of environment to help other people. But I really feel like with my passions and my strengths, I am very politically active. I am very academically – I have a lot of academic strengths is what I'm trying to say. And I feel like I can use those – to aid the bigger picture, to raise funds, to be a voice for the children who I worked with, because that's really what they need, and that's something I feel like I personally can give them and I personally can contribute to.
Right, raise awareness of their existence, number
exactly.
one, and their needs, and then raise funds to improve.
Exactly.
Encapsulate that? Okay, because I don't want to put words in your mouth. So let's talk about the experience. There were 39 children from 0 to 18.
Mm-hmm.
You said destitute and disabled.
Yes.
How were the living conditions?
The home can only house about 40 kids, but at any given time there can be up to 70. The doctor who owns the home will never turn a child away. So you can have children sharing beds. There's one bathroom for all of the children. The volunteers have a separate bathroom, so that's nice. But it's a three-story home. You're kind of in the slums. Chaclacayo is not a very wealthy area. It's a very, very, very small town. Just at the foothills of the Andes Mountains, so kind of in the slums. But it's not the traditional slums, you think. I mean, you're not living in a cardboard box.
And it doesn't sound necessarily urban.
You're not peeing in a bucket or anything like that. But it's definitely different than any experience that you would have in the United States. I mean, you do eat rice and beans with your meals, cold showers every day. They save the hot water for the babies, which is important. And I think the biggest thing that I learned just overall being there, being in the environment itself, was that even though the children were disabled, anywhere ranging with disabilities from cerebral palsy to cleft lip and palate, they were just kids. I mean, they screamed and cried and woke up at 5 o'clock in the morning and wanted love and wanted to play. They weren't like the children that you see in the commercials, you know, the infomercials where they're crying and, you know, really suffering. These kids, yes, they're afflicted with disorders, but they're just children. They just happen to be in Peru.
Right. Okay, so I have one more question for you, and then I'll let you go, and we'll talk one more time about all the details about this fundraiser. If you had, let's say, $1 million. Mm-hmm. Let's just say, if you had $1 million, how would you improve the life of those 39 kids? Or maybe that's a ridiculous number. I'm just picking a number out mm-hmm. of the hat. But if you mm-hmm. had the money to be able to help them, mm-hmm. no holds bar, mm-hmm. what would you do?
Well, I believe very strongly in the idea that if you give a man a fish, you feed him for a day. If you teach a man to fish, you feed him for life. And I think that I wouldn't initially just give the $1 million to the orphanage because the funds would be burned through. I mean, their expenses every month are $35,000 per month. So I think that it would be important to utilize the funds in such a way that you could improve the lives of the children who haven't yet reached the home so that they wouldn't have to be brought there to begin with. For example, most of the children who come to the home come from villages up in the mountains where there's no technology, there's no information resources for them, there's very little transportation resources for them, and a lot of the reasons why the children get brought to the home is because their parents simply just don't have the access to the services early enough when they need it to get the child the help they need before the situation becomes dire. So I think it would be important to use those funds to sort of look at the bigger picture. How can we make it so that these children don't have to be brought to an orphanage in these conditions in the first place? Building transportation systems is important. Having medical dispensaries is important up in the mountains. Providing information, educational resources, that's how I would use the money.
Infrastructure, education, mm-hmm. and medical.
Yes.
Interesting. Okay, well, thank you.
No,
I would give you an A+, but I'm not a professor.
Oh, thank you.
I thought that was a great answer.
That.
Exactly. And thank you so much for what you've done and your efforts to raise awareness about the people that impacted you so greatly this spring. So one more time, you tell me about that film and where it's going to be in this fundraiser.
So the film is going to be at the Gold Town Theater on Friday and Saturday, 9 p.m. on Friday, 2 p.m. on Saturday. We're going to have refreshments. There's going to be a presentation after the film about Peru and my experience there. Your tickets can be purchased at the door. They're $5 each. And the film covers a band of brothers who travel the world in search of the human experience.
Right. And if you cannot make it at those times, Friday at 9 or Saturday at 2, by all means, drop by the Gold Town Nickelodeon. There's a jar out there and raise some funds so Hannah can do the good that she wants to do.
And another little secret about the fundraiser is the children actually don't know I'm putting this fundraiser on for them. So I'm hoping that we can get a lot of support, take a lot of pictures of everybody who shows up and raise a lot of money, and then I can send the check to them. And hopefully it'll be a really fat check. And
that'll be great. Whatever it is, they'll be really appreciative.
I hope so.
All right. Thank you, Hannah, for coming in today, and
thank you for having me.
All right. Great. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
Van formando la represa, accidentes y fracasos, les obliga a la pobreza. En la quebrada de Guayaca, van formando la represa, para contener el Zanza, que es un río revoltoso. En la quebrada de la Inglaterra, van formando la represa, solo teniendo la muerte por amiga inseparable. La represa de Guayaca, pura piedra y cemento, fuertemente remachada con la sangre del obrero. La quebrada de la isla, van formando la represa, solo teniendo la muerte por amiga inseparable. La represa de Guayaca, pura piedra y cemento, fuertemente remachada con la sangre del obrero. Vamos.
que me vea rodar como el zapallito, pero no sabes que así vente a mi tantito. Aunque me vea rodar como el zapallito, pero no sabes que así vente a mi tantito. Vamos, Efraín.
Hello and welcome back to Juno Afternoon on KTOO News Juno. I'm Joan Pardis, your Monday host. Jeff Brown is at the board. He's the producer and engineer. It's 3:20 p.m. in Alaska's capital city. And our next guests are Richard Radford and Adi Nisia from AWARE. They're here to talk about the Girls on the Run program and I guess the Guys on the Run program too. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
All right, let's start at the very beginning. I know that Girls on the Run has been going on for 6 years and I'm a little familiar with it, but let's pretend I don't know anything about it and can you tell me about the program, Adi?
Yeah, so Girls on the Run is an international program that is designed to inspire girls to be joyful, healthy, and confident using a fun experience-based curriculum. And so throughout the course of 12 weeks, 24 lessons, girls engage in fun, active curricula around topics to support positive self-esteem, positive body image, self-confidence, skills to support them in becoming a strong team, and then learning how to be a part of and serve their community. So the program is all over the U.S., and it's spread rapidly throughout Southeast Alaska. So AWARE in Juneau started the program in 2008, and since then we've hosted programs in every elementary school in Juneau and then in the communities of Sitka, Ketchikan, Yakutat, Wrangell, Petersburg, Hoonah, Haines. So it's really it's a movement of women and girls really learning how to be healthy and how to love and respect themselves and the power of what happens when girls and women come together with that intention. It's been a really personally transformative program, and it's been just a joy to watch it transform girls and women throughout Southeast Alaska.
That sounds great. So I have a couple of questions, okay? I'm a little familiar with the program. So it's a 12-week program, and how old are the girls? What is the age range for the girls that are eligible?
So Girls on the Run is for girls 3rd through 5th grade, and then Girls on Track is for girls 6th through 8th grade.
Okay, and then you train coaches, and then they go and work with the girls after school, I guess different times and days for each school, and so on and so forth, and then they culminate in a 5K. The whole program culminates in a 5K run. Is that correct?
That's accurate. And the 5K, we say that the finish line is just the beginning, and so it's really about teaching girls to set a goal, to work towards that goal, and then the power of accomplishing the goal. And we believe that skill set can be transferred as girls become young women and are able to pursue their dreams and find their place in this world.
That sounds great. And over the 6 years, all those communities, all those schools, a lot of girls have already gone through the program.
Many,
obviously.
Many girls and many women. I mean, coaches who volunteer talk about how the program has impacted them, or that they feel like they've gotten more from the program than the girls have. And it really has a spirit that invites you to reflect and look deeply at yourself, at your values, at who you are and how you live in the world, and how to, well, let's see, I think I'll read the vision because I think it encapsulates very clearly what the program is about. We envision a world where every girl knows and activates her limitless potential and is free to boldly pursue her dreams.
That sounds wonderful.
It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I don't think it gets any better than for any human being.
Yeah.
So speaking of that, so that's the Girls on the Run program. That's 6 years. You're going into the 7th year. We'll talk about coach trainings if people want to be involved and how people can learn more about signing up their daughters if they're interested. But what's this new thing that's going on?
It's very exciting. It's something that's been in the work for a couple of years. And we are just so thrilled to be able to share and announce that we're piloting our first ever Boys Run program. And I'm going to introduce introduce Richard Radford, who has served at AWARE as an awesome employee for the last 6 months and has been really instrumental in helping us to get to this phase of piloting the program this fall. So I'll let him talk a little more about the program.
Okay, let's hear it. What's it about?
Sure. Well, one of the things, we're from AWARE, and one of our main goals is ending gender violence in our community and communities around the world and just right here in Southeast. And we implement programs for boys. A lot of the times when men especially, but people meet me and they say, oh, you're working at AWARE? You know, because I'm the guy who's there, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things we're doing moving forward is trying to work with boys and men, you know, mentors in the community and boys who are coming up to join us, you know, in this cause and to develop healthy relationships and healthy attitudes, healthy masculinity. So the Boys Run program is going to be similar to Girls on the Run, where it's an after-school program for third to fifth grade boys. This is a brand new program, and we've done it in-house, so we're working with a partner agency in Sitka, SAFE, and we're hoping to launch it with, just one school probably to start with this fall, and we'll see how it goes.
And which school will that be?
We're still finalizing it. We think we know, but we're still finalizing it.
Not ready for announcement yet. That's great. Congratulations for making this happen. That's really wonderful. Now, along with this program obviously is fueled by people, and you need coaches. So do you have an upcoming coach training?
We both have upcoming trainings, and we both, you know, these programs wouldn't exist and wouldn't impact and inspire kids without the coaches that show up. And really, we're not looking for athletes in particular, although athletes are welcome. We're looking for human beings that align with a vision of creating a healthy community and creating youth that are part of this change of really embodying and living in a violence-free world and in a world where we deeply respect ourselves and respect each other and find ways to be in this community where we can really tap into our limitless potential. So we are fueled by volunteerism and have great appreciation. And the Girls on the Run coach training is coming up on Saturday, August 23rd, from 9 to 5 at AWARE. And you can call AWARE or email for more information about registering. And the same is true for the Boys Run training, which happens the following day. It'll be in Sitka, and we'll be providing airfare coverage for our coach volunteers to attend a one-day training in Sitka. And we're doing two pilots this fall, so one pilot in Juneau and one pilot in Sitka. So coaches from both of those communities will come together for a one-day training.
For the boy program. That sounds great. Yeah. So how many female coaches do you need, and how many male coaches do you need?
Okay, so for Juno, we would like about 13 coaches, and we have a number of, a handful that are in and a handful that are clarifying, but if you're inspired, don't be shy. And then for the Boys Run program, we are looking for four awesome men that want to join with us in inspiring little boys.
Sounds great. So let's talk about the requirements. So let's say I'm listening and I say, kind of sounds interesting. For a coach, I kind of run, and or maybe I'm one of these amazing Juno athletes, or maybe I don't run, but I want to run. What's the prerequisites? What kind of skills do you have to become an effective coach? Because people like to volunteer, but they think, oh, well, I can't do that. How can I work with a bunch of girls to get to a 5K and work with this curriculum to give them the self-esteem to help them navigate through life? I mean, it sounds huge.
So, the beauty is, really, all you have to do is be yourself. So over the years, I've watched, you know, we'll have a team of coaches, and one woman is in her 60s and another is 21, and one is an athlete and the other is an artist that hasn't run ever. And then we have this mixture of girls, and we have some girls that are athletic and some that are shy and some, you know, so really what we're looking for are people that understand the vision and mission of ending violence, of promoting healthy relationships, of promoting positive body image, self-esteem, self-confidence, that are willing to open their hearts and learn and join with us. If you feel like you align with the vision and mission of what AWARE does in this community and in Southeast Alaska and have any inclination, we would highly encourage you to reach out and connect more deeply with Heidi and Richard, and they can talk you through more of the details. But alongside that, both of the programs do ask for a significant time commitment.
What is the time commitment?
The Boys Run program is going to be 9 weeks. It's 18 lessons. They'll be after school.
So is that like
twice a week?
2 hours? Each session is like an
probably
hour?
Probably about
hour
there, yeah. You probably need a couple hours, both before and after. A real willingness to sort of invest in keeping up with that schedule. I know how things go in Juneau. By the time November hits, nobody really wants to get up for work in the morning, but, you know.
We have to get through the winter.
That's right.
We have to wait till the snow starts flying.
So the lesson itself is in an hour and a half, and both Girls on the Run and Boys Run will run twice a week.
And then the lesson is provided.
The
right?
lesson is
so,
provided.
So the coaches are completely supported with the curricula they need.
All
and the
materials.
And
we laminate their worksheets and prep everything in this easy-to-use, beautiful, ready-to-go format. And then we train them and give them a really thorough overview of what to expect. And then throughout this season, we provide ongoing technical support. We'll provide site visits and encouragement and, you know, process any challenges that come up. So we're really present to support teams as the season unfolds. But fundamentally, we're looking for people that can commit to 1 to 2 times a week. For Boys Run, it'll be 9 weeks, and for Girls on the Run, it's 12.
Okay. All right, so let's give some contact information. So if somebody's listening and they're interested to learn more, where I would assume they search AWARE Juneau, AWARE Southeast Alaska as far as your website, but what's a good number to get a hold of you guys?
586-6623. And to learn more about volunteering with Boys Run, you would speak with Richard Radford. And to learn more about Girls on the Run, you would speak with Heidi, who is our new Girls on the Run temporary advocate position. So she'll be supporting all of our coaches over the next number of months.
That sounds great. All right. Well, thank you for coming in today. Thank you all for doing what you do. And we'll be looking for your girls in the future. They're going to change our world, right?
That's right.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome back to Juno Afternoon. It's 3:34 p.m. in Alaska's capital city and throughout Alaska. You're listening to KTOO News Juno, and this is a live radio show right from downtown Juno. Our next guest is Mike Satre. He is here to talk about the Golden North Salmon Derby happening this weekend. Hey, Mike.
How are you doing this afternoon? Thanks for having me.
Great. How are you?
Excellent. Excellent. We're just a couple days away from one of the biggest family events of the Juno summer, so we're pretty excited.
Okay. Let's start at the very beginning, okay? What is the Golden North Salmon Derby?
You know, the
people
Golden
are North... howling out there. What do you mean you don't know what it is? I do, but I'm still asking.
Exactly. No, that's fine. You know, and the Golden North Salmon Derby is one of those things that we truly do have to go back in time to talk about where it started. So back in 1947, the territorial sportsmen put together the Golden North Salmon Derby in order to raise money to fund scholarships for the Territorial Sportsmen Scholarship Foundation. And those scholarships started to be awarded in 1953. And since that time, each year we've had the Derby, and each year they've been able to put more funds in the bank account to give to Juno students from the sales of the fish that are caught during that Derby. So this is the 68th year that we've had this Derby, and these Derbies have provided over $1.6 million in scholarships for kids right here in Juno.
That is fantastic, combining education and fishing.
Yeah.
It's Juno at its best. That is great. So we're going to get into the who, what, where, and why, even though everyone knows about the Golden North Salmon Derby. But let's talk about the scholarships. So how does one apply for the scholarship, and how is somebody picked? Like, what's the criteria?
Sure. So you know, Territorial Sportsman acts as an entity, and then there's also the Territorial Sportsman Scholarship Foundation, which operates under the auspices of TSI, but it has its own separate board. And each year they post the scholarship applications with the career offices at the high schools. And really the emphasis is, and you'll have to pardon me because I'm not as familiar with some of the details, but the emphasis is on people that are going into some of the natural life sciences, biology, resource management, some of these things that we as Southeast Alaskans or as Alaskans are very, very familiar with. And there's certainly many, many families who they started off with these scholarships, are able to get their degrees, come back to Juno, and now their kids are applying for and receiving these scholarships. So for anybody who's interested, seniors or kids are going to be seniors in high school this year, they should be able to check in with the career and college offices, get that application along with a whole host of other scholarships that are out there, and be able to put together their application letter, do interviews with the board, and then those are awarded in the spring.
Sounds great. Okay, let's talk fishing. So what is the... Tell us the who, what, where, when, and why, and what we need to know to participate in the Derby.
Okay, so this year's 68th annual Golden North Salmon Derby starts on Friday morning at 7:30 sharp, but you cannot participate unless you have a ticket. Tickets went on sale just a few days ago. You can pick those up downtown here at Harry's Plumbing and Heating, at Lemon Creek at Western Auto, Juno Mercantile and Armory by the airport, and then, of course, the historic DeHart store out at Auk Bay.
And how much are the tickets?
Tickets are $40 for adults, and they are $10 for kids ages 6 to 12. You do have to be 6 years old to participate in the Derby, and so we have that reduced price for kids age 6 to 12, and then everybody else is $40 a person.
Okay, so it opens at 7 o'clock on Friday, and when does it close?
So at 7:30 a.m. on Friday.
Sorry.
And so what happens is before you go out on the water, you have to be at one of our validation stations to get your Derby ticket punched to say that, yep, you bought a ticket and you're valid to go out in the water. So people will line up at Malaga Harbor, Auk Bay, Aurora and Harris Harbors, the Douglas Boat Harbor, the North Douglas Boat Ramp, and at T Harbor for the validation right at 7:30. And then folks will head out on the fishing grounds. There's some safety slows zones around each harbor. We want to make sure people are being very patient and courteous as they're boating out and heading to their favorite fishing spot. But once you get past those, you're free to go wherever you want within the Derby boundaries. They extend fairly far south and north of town, and there's maps that are available for folks, but most people are pretty familiar with them. And then there's two ways to win. If you have caught what you think is a big lunker, a nice 20-pound type fish, you can bring that in. You can get that fish weighed, and you'll be eligible for one of the top 68 prizes. But let's say you went out and caught a mess of cohos. Maybe they're 11 or 12 pounds each. Those are nice fish, and they're going to get lots of money for us when we sell them. But they may not be heavy enough to get a weighted fish prize. You turn those in to get a, what we call a scholarship fish ticket. And then those tickets are eligible for a bunch of random drawings for either cash prizes or even the chance to be part of our High Fives promotion where you can win up to $50,000.
Whoa. Wow, that is great. So there's two ways. It's the big gigantic fish, and then there's putting your hat in the ring with the smaller fish to get raffle drawings, basically.
Correct. And
raffle prizes.
The idea is to get everybody to turn in all of their fish, because that's how Territorial Sportsman gets the money to fund these scholarships. So last year, with all of the kings and cohos that were turned in, we were able to get just over $40,000 was the purchase price for those fish. And Mike Erickson over at Alaska Glacier Seafoods does such a wonderful job of collecting and processing that catch and basically paying us the same thing he would pay a troller who came up to his dock with fish to sell. So it's as if we have a mini little mosquito fleet around Juneau catching wonderful troll caught king and coho salmon and then selling those for scholarships.
That sounds great. So let's talk about the prizes. You said there are 68 prizes. And does that include the raffle for the smaller fish?
No, that's
just 68 prizes for the big boys.
Correct. And we have, literally hundreds of Juneau businesses that donate everything from $5 gift certificates to thousands of dollars in cash and merchandise, outboard motors and inflatables. It goes on and on and on. We really want to thank every single business that's out there listening for taking the time to donate to this. And many of these businesses do it every single year. First prize is our biggest prize. There's $10,000 in cash, and there's a winner's jack and a few other things, and it's right around $12,000 total. The 68th prize is actually fairly big, because if you land on that very last spot, we think that's special, and it's a little over $2,300. And then everything else ranges in between. I think second and third prizes are around $2,000, and it goes down. But even those prizes in the 50s and 60s are, those bundles are worth about $500 each. So pretty neat prizes. All the prizes have been updated recently on our website. We finally got that done. I know people have been going to our website and it hasn't been updated, but that is now complete. And so you can see those full prize lists, and then those will be out as inserts in the paper later this week and available when you buy your Derby ticket starting on Wednesday.
Okay. All right. And is there anything that people should know as far as, condition, anything new this year?
There's nothing that's terribly new, but there's a couple reminders. One, first and foremost, we want everybody to be safe. So obey the boat safety zones around the harbor. So these are no-wake courtesy zones. We want to make sure everyone gets in and out of the harbor without hurting anybody. But also, take a look at the weather forecast. Make yourself a bit of a float plan. Let people know where you are going for the week and make sure that all of your systems are up and running. You've got your flares and your life jackets and everything else you need. Also, have your fishing license. Contestants need to obey all of the normal ADF&G rules, so you might want to double-check the regulations for Southeast Alaska again. These days, it's 6 cohos and 2 king salmon over 20, and the king salmon have to be over 28 inches for retention. We do only take coho and king salmon, just release or take for your own personal consumption, the pinks and chums. And we just, I think the other thing to keep in mind is, this is more than just going out to see who can catch the biggest fish. We want people to look at this as a family event that's helping fund scholarships for kids around town. It could be your friends, it could be your neighbors, it could be your relatives. And so we want people to go out on the water, take that time, enjoy a weekend with the family, and also contribute to a good cause.
That sounds great. So one more time, the opening time and the closing time.
Sure. 7:30 Friday morning. Tickets will begin validated and all the boats will head out. And then I always have to double check here, but at 6 p.m. on Sunday at the three-way station. So there's 3 way stations, Douglas Harbor, Amalga Harbor, and Auk Bay Harbor. But at those way stations, a bomb will go off at 6 p.m. and you have to be within the boat safety zone, that final finish line, to have your fish accepted. So 6 p.m. is the cutoff to be back in the harbor on Sunday.
Okay. All right. Well, Mike, thank you so much for coming in. Thanks for all you do and Territorial Sportsmen. And everybody, go fishing this weekend.
Yeah, we'll see everybody out on the water. Thank you.
All right. We're going to take a short break and then we're going to listen.
Way up north in the last frontier, we got a little sport that we love so dear. It's called combat fishing. Combat fishing. Combat fishing, and footy is mighty fine.
the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 4th of August, 2014. Louis Armstrong's birthday, New Orleans, 1901. When he was 6, he sang in a vocal quartet and performed on street corners. The Karnofskys, a family of Russian Jews, hired Louis to work on their junk wagon, and he bought his first cornet with money that the family lent him. Sent to reform school, 1913, he was 12 years old, and that's where he learned to play the cornet. It's the birthday of the poet Robert Hayden, born in Detroit, 1913. He was skinny, severely nearsighted, grew up in the ghetto, and was made fun of by other children. He went off to become a poet teacher for many years at Fisk University and became poet laureate consultant to the Library of Congress in 1985. Robert Hayden, who said, "Art is not an escape, but a way of finding order in chaos, a way of confronting life." It's the birthday of the author of Dreams from My Father and The Audacity of Hope, Barack Obama, born in Honolulu, 1961. It's the birthday of the man who said, "Poets are the unacknowledged legislators of the world." That was Percy Bysshe Shelley, born in Sussex, England, 1792. The Norwegian novelist Knut Hamsun, born in Lom, Norway, 1859, grew up very poor. He was an indentured servant to his uncle when he was a boy, escaped at the age of 14, came to the United States, became a streetcar operator in Chicago, and then went back to Norway and wrote his early novels, his novel Hunger, in 1890. And it was on this day, 1944, that Anne Frank, 15 years old, was arrested by the Gestapo in Amsterdam, along with her family and 4 other Jews who were living in hiding and 2 Dutch helpers. They had been in hiding more than 2 years in a secret space in the warehouse where her father's company had its offices. He ran a company that sold pectin for jam and herbs and spices for meats. 8 of them living in about 500 square feet of livable space. They had to be silent all day. They couldn't flush the toilet, couldn't open windows. They were terrified of being discovered. Their survival depended on 4 Dutch workers in Otto Frank's factory who brought them food nearly every day and library books and magazines and clothes and news from the outside world. And through it all, Anne Frank kept a diary. She'd been given the diary for her 13th birthday, and she wrote about all the normal aspects of life, until on this day in 1944, acting on a tip from an anonymous Dutch caller, the Gestapo came in and took them all away. One of the Dutch helpers, Miep Gies, found the diary scattered on the floor, and she held on to it. Otto Frank, the father, was the only one of the 8 who survived the concentration camps. He came back, found the diary, and published it because Anne had written that she wanted to publish it. It came out in English in 1952, and it has sold more than 30 million copies. Here's a poem for today by Mary Oliver, "What Gorgeous Thing." I do not know what gorgeous thing the bluebird keeps saying, his voice easing out of his throat, beak, body, into the pink air of the early morning. I like it, whatever it is. Sometimes it seems the only thing in the world that is without dark thoughts. Sometimes it seems the only thing in the world that is without questions that can't and probably never will be answered. The only thing that is entirely content with the pink, then clear white morning and gratefully says so. What Gorgeous Thing, a poem by Mary Oliver from Blue Horses, published by Penguin, used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Our next piece is from Pete Griffin's new CD, Welcome to Alaska, Tales from the Tongass Forest and Beyond. And this piece is called A Glacier by Any Other Name.
I came across a biography not too long ago that caught my interest. Thomas was born on a farm in Ohio in 1841, the son of a farmer and carriage maker. He spent his childhood in that sprawling landscape, attending country schools. I can picture him hunting squirrels and rabbits on the scattered woodlots between the cornfields. Maybe not typical of other farm kids, he developed a fondness for math and natural sciences and an enthusiasm for discovery. What made things work and why? When he couldn't find what he needed in his school books, he conducted experiments on his own. This need to know resulted in his receiving a teaching certificate at age 16, and he became the assistant principal at Marlboro Union School at the ripe old age of 17. At the age of 21, he received his only higher education degree he was to ever earn, that of normal instructor, after attending a one-year program at the Normal School in Lebanon, Ohio. Thomas taught high school for several years. His success as a teacher was such that he was elected to the chair of physics and mechanics at Ohio A&M, the forerunner of Ohio State University, despite his lack of conventional academic credentials. In 1878, he was called to the chair of physics at the Imperial University of Japan. While there, he measured gravity at sea level and at the top of Mount Fujiyama, obtaining the most accurate measurement of the Earth's mass to that date. After 3 years in Japan, Thomas returned to Ohio State University and, seeing the value of weather forecasting, established the Ohio Meteorological Bureau in 1881. Eventually, his skills in administration and his scientific curiosity led him to Washington, D.C., where he served as superintendent of weights and measures. It was there that he issued an order that the meter and kilogram would in the future be regarded as the fundamental standards for length and mass in the United States. I had always wondered who was responsible for the use of the metric system in this country. In Washington, Thomas also served as superintendent of the U.S. Coast and Geodetic Survey, served on the United States Lighthouse Board, the Bering Sea Commission, and the Alaska Boundary Commission before his retirement at age 60. It was in this latter position that he was credited with establishing the boundary between Alaska and Canada. Ah, so there is an Alaska connection here. In 1892, in honor of his service to the country, a prominent geographic feature in southeast Alaska was named after Thomas. Now, over the years, I have had a bit of a problem with this habit we have of naming geographic features after politicians and bureaucrats, especially when we have perfectly good names to begin with. In 1879, naturalist John Muir named the glacier behind Juneau the Auk Glacier for the local Tlingit tribe. The Auk people had their own name for the glacier, Auktoxit, the glacier behind the little lake, or Sitantagu, the glacier behind the town. And then, in 1892, that glacier was renamed after Thomas, better known as Thomas Mendenhall. In 1999, the U.S. Coast and Geodetic Survey Society came to town and presented the Forest Service with a plaque regarding the achievements of Thomas Mendenhall. On board the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration survey vessel in town that day, I saw charts that Thomas Mendenhall had signed at the turn of the century, charts that NOAA was still using even while in the process of updating. My curiosity led me to the historian for the Mendenhall Family Organization, who provided details on Mendenhall's life, and although Thomas Mendenhall never saw the glacier that now bears his name, his story is one worth remembering. So what did I get out of all this? Well, for every name on a mountain or a river or glacier, there's a story. And maybe next time, before I criticize the name of a geographic feature, I'll find out the story behind it first. The story behind the name Mendenhall is one of a young man driven by his enthusiasm for science and for discovering how things work. It's a story about the contributions of a man who, despite his lack of formal education, left behind a legacy of discovery that to this day benefits us. That's worth thinking about as we stand at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center, looking out at that river of ice that is Juneau's backyard.
This is Bird Note. National symbol though it may be, this juvenile bald eagle, not long out of the nest, is anything but graceful at the moment. While still in the nest high in a tree, juvenile eagles practice fanning their wings and jumping in the air to test how flying feels. They may even flap out onto nearby branches. When they're finally ready, the young eagles attempt their first test flight. Sometimes on these initial jaunts, the birds are likely to lose altitude and land on the ground. They'll rest there for a while and perhaps get fed by the parents before they manage to lift off into the air and return to the safety of a tall tree. A juvenile bald eagle is the same size as an adult, but differs in coloring. You may have seen one of these birds without realizing it was a young eagle. The juvenile is a mottled chocolate brown. The young bird keeps this plumage for 3 or 4 years before maturing into the distinctive dark adult with the contrasting white head and tail. You can see a photograph of a young bald eagle and a video of one fledging when you come to our website, birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann.
It's 3:56 p.m. in Alaska's capital city. The weather is mostly cloudy, scattered showers tonight, lows around 52. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, scattered showers, highs around 62, light winds becoming southeast 10 miles per hour in the afternoon. Tomorrow night, cloudy, scattered showers. Wednesday, numerous showers, highs around 62, and Wednesday night, mostly cloudy. As far as Thursday, we're looking at cloudy, and for Derby weekend, it looks cloudy, chance of rain, highs around 59. Ranging from 51 to 59. Right now, Juneau Airport, 54. Downtown Juneau, 55. Mendenhall Valley, 53. Thank you for listening to Juneau Afternoon on KTOO News Juneau. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. I'm Joan Pardis. Next up, All Things Considered. And I'm back before All Things Considered. Tune in tonight at 7 p.m. to listen to Dr. Elaine Schroeder with her show Mind Over Matter. The issue of gay marriage is prominent in today's news. Tonight's show will focus on a related issue, gay parenting. The research, the rights, and the real experiences shared by two lesbian moms in the thick of child-rearing. That's tonight. Dr. Elaine Schroeder, her guests, at 7 p.m. Okay, now we're going to go. All Things Considered. Have a great day.